This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this U.S. politics edition of the program, what have we learned over the last 2 weeks of public hearings during the historic impeachment inquiry of U.S. President Donald Trump, and where does the process go from here? Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. After hearing from more than 12 witnesses, many of whom career diplomats who responded to a subpoena in defiance of the White House, Democrats in the House Intelligence Committee believe they have enough evidence to proceed with the impeachment of President Trump. No Republican on the committee, nor in the entire House of Representatives, is likely to support impeachment, the constitutional process by which the U.S. Congress levels charges against a government official, in this case, the president. Democrats are seeking to prove that Mr. Trump leveraged military assistance and an Oval Office meeting for Ukraine in exchange for announcing investigations of former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden, as well as a debunked theory purporting that Ukraine, not Russia, interfered in the 2016 presidential election. According to Democrat Adam Schiff, chair of the House Intelligence Committee, the president used his public office for private gain by withholding congressionally approved taxpayer funds from Ukraine, a vulnerable ally fighting Russian aggression, in exchange for something of personal value. Schiff claims that Mr. Trump sought a bribe from the Ukrainian president. In other words, he allegedly placed his personal political interests above the national interests, conduct worthy of impeachment. The remedy, which the U.S. Founding Fathers inserted in the Constitution for such high crimes and misdemeanors. On the other hand, ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee, Republican Devin Nunes, disparaged the process. He said falsely that Democrats had been trying to overturn the 2016 election. Actually, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi was reluctant to launch impeachment proceedings, and analysts say Democrats may have more to lose than to gain from the process. Mr. Nunes also alleged that most of the evidence was hearsay or secondhand and kept insisting on hearing from the initial whistleblower, apparently impervious to the dozen witnesses, one of whom, Ambassador Gordon Sondland, corroborated the whistleblower's allegation of a quid pro quo. Mr. Nunes and other Republican members concluded that no harm was done because the almost $400 million of military aid to Ukraine was eventually released, without Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky having to publicly announce investigations into the Bidens or the debunked theory that Ukraine, not Russia, hacked the 2016 U.S. election. The most that any Republican would concede regarding the testimonies was that the president's behavior was inappropriate, but it did not rise to the level of impeachment. Moreover, given the upcoming 2020 elections, they argued it was best for the American people to decide the fate of President Donald Trump. Well, joining us to review some key public testimonies from the impeachment inquiry into U.S. President Donald Trump and what comes next are our favorite veteran political analysts. John Fortier, he's the director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, a Washington-based think tank, and Jim Kessler, he's senior vice president for policy at Third Way, and that's a think tank based here in Washington. Both gentlemen join us here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, John Fortier, let's begin with you. What's your takeaway from these public hearings? What did we learn? What are some of the highlights that struck you?
Well, I think Democrats moved from a period of time where they were collecting information behind the scenes, taking depositions, to public hearings, which laid out their case. Their case is basically that the president asked for favors that would benefit him, favors of the Ukrainian government, calling for investigations of his political rival, Joe Biden, conditioning that on aid or announcing the investigations. Republicans are essentially the defense counsel in this play here, and their arguments are, you could say they're all over the place, but like a defense counsel, they're raising doubts. And the doubts are that nothing really happened at the end of the day. The money didn't go through. The investigations weren't announced. That the process has been unfair. That it's not really wise to remove a president when you have an election around the corner and the people can weigh in. And I think we're at something of a standstill here. Public opinion could change still. We still have more time in the House where they'll go to the Judiciary Committee and have some more public testimony and ultimately have a vote. But as of now, public opinion really hasn't shifted much. Republicans are with the president. His numbers are not great, but they're just as good as they were before impeachment started. And unless the numbers move significantly and large numbers of Republicans, 20 senators or so, a big chunk of the American public, decide to do this, we're likely headed for going to the Senate, where the president is ultimately acquitted of whatever comes out of impeachment in the House.
So turning to you, Jim Kessler, for your takeaways from the hearings.
Well, I think we learned a few things unequivocally. One is there was allegations that the president essentially enlisted the Ukraine president to dig up dirt on his number one political rival and threatened to hold back military aid to that country unless that happened. We now know that's true. That is now beyond a shadow of a doubt. You can say, well, they didn't succeed. It was thwarted along the way, but at least that was the attempt. The other thing we learned is it didn't seem to matter, certainly to Republicans in Congress, and maybe not to the American public. Their views on Donald Trump, for the most part, are baked. And depending on where you were watching the coverage of these hearings, you heard completely different stories. And I was looking at different news outlets and as they were covering it. And, you know, in some cases, it was a really damning portrayal of the president and certainly impeachable offenses. And then on other news outlets, you looked at it and it was as if, you know, it was an alternative universe. The president did absolutely nothing wrong. And we're in a situation in America where you watch your news is basically how you are viewing the world and what interpretation of events that you're getting. So in the end of the day, this was a reluctant action from Speaker Nancy Pelosi. This is not something that she wanted to do, but the transcript of the president's call with the Ukraine president really made it that something had to happen. But I'm not sure much changed over these hearings.
In terms of public opinion?
Public opinion and certainly on removal of the president.
Well, back to you, John Fortier. Representative Schiff, the chair of the Intelligence Committee, says that we can't really wait for elections, that this is so serious, the misconduct from the president, especially because he tried to influence the 2020 election. So waiting for an election when it's the very thing that he was trying to influence in his favor would be foolish. What do you make of that argument? And what do you make of the Democrats going forward, knowing full well that public opinion, at least so far, hasn't moved too much more in favor of impeachment, and that it's a risky endeavor?
Well, certainly the Constitution has provided for the process of impeachment and a removal trial in the Senate for times where a Congress, with some consensus, believes that the president has abused power or should be removed. And so they're within their rights to go forward with that if they believe that this is something that is very core to the essence of American democracy in the coming election. But on the other side, you do have, and Jim referred to this, some reluctance on Democrats' part. Earlier, Nancy Pelosi's speaker and others worried about getting into this as a political matter. Will it play well in the election? Because unless things change, which they could, they changed during the Watergate hearings, and public opinion changes, that's a different case. But if they don't change, then we kind of know the result. We know that Donald Trump will go in a trial next year, will be acquitted. Probably both sides will feel very strongly that they were right. It might impact a bit of the early part of the campaign for Democrats in Iowa and New Hampshire. And then will they be better off? And so the Democrats have had this dilemma for a long time with these new allegations this summer. Felt like they had to go forward. But it's not clear that politically that all are excited about going forward, given that the election is close by. The election is something that the people can speak on. This is a president who has a chance at another term, unlike Bill Clinton, who is at the end of his two terms. It's possible that the people will speak and make the final judgment.
So, Jim Kessler, you have your finger on the pulse of the Democrats. The reason, as I said, put forward principally by Adam Schiff, the chair of the Intelligence Committee, is that we really can't wait for the election because that's the very thing that President Trump was trying to tamper with, as he allegedly did in 2016, by inviting a foreign adversary to influence the election in his favor. So, in a sense, we're looking at the same thing happening again, and Mr. Schiff is saying, and many Democrats are saying, that they have to do their constitutional duty, even if it hurts them politically. How do you reconcile this, and what is the danger, but also the danger of not impeaching the president?
Well, the key word in that sentence is duty. And this was not something that either Pelosi or Schiff wanted to do. They felt it was their duty to do so. There isn't a time limit on it's this close to an election, so therefore you can ignore something that the president did. And There was a feeling among these senior Democrats that based on that transcript of that Ukraine call, or at least the transcript that was released by the president, that this was the time that you had to act, like the Democrats' hands were tied. Sure, there were probably half the Democratic caucus that wanted to impeach him from the very, very beginning, but that's not where Nancy Pelosi was. And then also on the subject of duty and that word, which is very important, I think one of the things we learned is there were some civil servants that testified, and wow, did they do an amazing job, and they really showed just how important their work is and how much they are dedicated to the Constitution and to the American government, regardless of who's president. And it took a lot of courage for these people, Fiona Hill, Ambassador Taylor, others, to put their life and security on the line and say what they had to say. And I think that they should be getting a medal for speaking out and for speaking the truth.
And we will get to that right after the break. But first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, Director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, from whom you just heard. He's Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. We're analyzing the state of play in the impeachment proceedings into U.S. President Donald J. Trump. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA. Here's a shout out to our very loyal listener from Japan, Monta Tanaka. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, John Fortier. I wanted to pick up on what Jim Kessler was saying before the break about the many national security officials and diplomats who came to the witness stand. They did so via subpoena. The White House discouraged them. In fact, they were blocked, but they responded to a congressionally ordered subpoena. And they were very admirable, and they spoke truth to power, even as President Trump tried to denigrate them as either the so-called deep state or the unelected bureaucrats. This kind of denigrating language by him and some Republicans is also rather disturbing to many Americans. We learned quite a bit from them, and there's really no reason to believe that they weren't telling the truth. They were under oath. So talk about some of them. I mean, Mr. Sondland, he's a political appointee. He's the U.S. ambassador to Europe. He's a donor to Mr. Trump. And he implicated everybody. Mick Mulvaney, the chief of staff, John Bolton, Mike Pompeo, the secretary of state. All of them were involved in this so-called scheme, this so-called quid pro quo.
You know, I'm a supporter of our civil service and people who have dedicated their careers to serving the public good. And there are many of them in government. We saw some of them on display this week. I do think, though, the view of where they're coming from is colored a little bit by where you sit in this case. Are they people who are bringing forward the truth that's been hidden? Or are they people who really just have some very strong differences with Donald Trump, whether it's just political differences? You know, I'm reluctant to use the term deep state. That's something that the president uses. But certainly, from the beginning, not only Democrats, but even many Republicans, the foreign policy establishment, the Never Trumpers, were very strongly against the president. And he has a sense that some of this is caused by that, that the people feel very strongly about Ukraine policy, the president changing Ukraine policy, this question of the whistleblower, which has become a big to-do in Washington between the parties. There's a sense that just there are people who were leaking, writing anonymous books about the president, and seeking to be the resistance in the government early on. So while I do think these particular witnesses were very bravely telling their story, I think there's a real question of whether we hear the full story and whether some of it is shaded by the fact that there is just a very great difference between policies of these people and this president.
Well, let me get Jim Kessler to respond. But I would just say that each one of them, whether it was a Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, the top Ukraine analyst or advisor on the Security Council, or Fiona Hill on the Security Council, or any of the other ambassadors, they were adamant in saying that they're impartial. I mean, they were just doing their jobs, listening and finding very disturbing evidence of parallel channel, withholding of aid in exchange for these types of investigations. And then there's the one gentleman, and I made reference to him, that's Ambassador Gordon Sondland, who basically said there was a quid pro quo. He's a very good friend and very strongly supportive of President Trump. He said there was a quid pro quo, and everybody was in the loop. How do you explain that?
The fact that everyone was in a loop didn't mean people thought that this was as big an issue as others are making of it. So, look, there are many things that people may feel that the president has done wrong or has veered off course, but I think the sense is that they feel that this is going too far. Removing the president, moving to this so quickly, the party that's been looking to do this from the beginning is pushing too hard on this narrative, which, you know, might have gotten the president a bit of trouble but isn't worth impeaching over.
Jim Kessler.
I think we're heading towards a dangerous place in this country. We had a situation where there was a smear campaign by people associated with Donald Trump, but not exactly in the White House, Rudy Giuliani.
His personal attorney.
His personal attorney, to falsify information and take down the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine because they couldn't trust her because she is a professional, to be privy and to be part of essentially a dirty trick scheme against Joe Biden, who is the person that Donald Trump is most afraid of. And then to propagate a narrative that Ukraine is the country that interfered and was hacking computers into the 2016 election, which is crazy talk and is part of the conspiracy theorists. And then you have other folks, whether it's Fiona Hill or Vindman or Sondland, who I agree there were parts of their testimony that was beneficial to Trump and parts of their testimony that's not, that whenever they had something to say that really exposed this filth coming from the administration, I mean, just absolute filth, it's that, well, they're never Trumpers and that they're part of the deep state. And this is their whole strategy in the Trump world, which is there is no truth and it's all biased. And if we can't trust these people like Fiona Hill, who came to testify, when the cost to them is so great, they know that their lives now are altered in a way they never could predict. You have the president of the United States tweeting horrible things about you. Your life is basically ruined at this point. For the rest of your life, you're going to need security around you because people are threatening to kill you for basically saying the truth and standing up for what the country's policies are and just saying, like, well, you know, where you stand depends on where you sit. Yeah, to a certain extent it does, but what the president was doing was exceptionally dirty. Does it warrant impeachment? That is debatable, okay? Was it wrong? That's not debatable, and even most Republicans are saying what he did was wrong. So I think we're treading in some dangerous ground here, and I hate to see what this means for future presidents. Like, where is the line that we draw that says, okay, this is okay, and this is okay in how you treat people?
Back to you, John Forte, very quickly. On the so-called theory that Ukraine and not Russia intervened in the 2016 election, which the president and many Republicans are still continuing to disseminate as somehow valid, what accounts for this? Because we know, we've known for quite a while, but Fiona Hill, the top advisor on Russia and Europe at the National Security Council, said that this is a fictional narrative being perpetrated by the Russian security forces and that it is done to sow discord and spread disinformation for their strategic benefit. Why do so many Republicans still buy this propaganda?
Well, I will agree with you that there are some aspects, but especially the so-called CrowdStrike theory, where the server of the DNC's emails is somehow in the Ukraine, that have been exaggerated, and sometimes by the president himself. I do think, though, it's not fair to say that the argument was the Republicans on the committee, and they made it clear that they didn't think that there was Russian interference. But there certainly was Ukrainian unhappiness with Donald Trump being president. Lots of officials either publicly stating that they would prefer a Hillary Clinton presidency or giving information to people potentially. I'm not making the case that that was worse than the Russians. By no means was it. But Donald Trump, for better or worse, felt uneasy with the leadership in Ukraine. Now, perhaps he's overreacted. In many ways, he's come into a new president, Zelensky, and said, should we trust this person? And I think in several areas, he has gotten into a place where he has done some things that are quite questionable. But I don't think that the idea that Ukraine wasn't somehow potentially on the other side of Donald Trump in the last election, that he was feeling a little funny about them, and that he's been investigated from the beginning, that is all on his mind. And I think Republicans broadly feel that there has been one thing after another to get this president, and the Mueller report and things that went on in the 2016 campaign are still fresh in their minds. But I'm trying to put the state of mind of the president, who was on some specifics, I think misguided, but in general ways worried about this new Ukrainian leadership.
It sounds a little hard to buy. If you look at some other things, Jim Kessler, just quickly, first of all, with regard to his interest in rooting out corruption, there's been no policy during the Trump administration where that's been a high priority. But with regard to Russia, he explicitly invited their interference in the 2016 election. So I don't know if you want to respond to John Fortier.
So, yes, he explicitly invited Russian interference in the election. And let's just say, for the sake of argument, that he was doing that in his sort of brash, joking, sarcastic New York way, and it wasn't in any way some version of collusion. And I think reasonable people can agree or disagree about that. But Russia interfered in the 2016 election in a way no country has ever interfered in our elections before, and a level that Dick Cheney, the former vice president of the United States, said is close to an act of war against the United States. So here we have America's number one adversary that is really bent on the weakening of the United States and the weakening of Europe, committing an overt act of hostility towards the United States. And the president of the United States is pretending it didn't happen. And like Inspector Clouseau is pointing at some moke on the street that may have had some interest in Hillary Clinton winning, but certainly no ability to impact the outcome, and creating this narrative that at best is false and at worst is really damaging to geopolitical balance of this country. I mean, Russia is our enemy and we're letting them off the hook, and they committed really just an overt act of aggression against the democracy of this country and continue to do so. Like, when are they going to stop if this is the way the president is reacting to this incursion?
It's hard to know. The Russians seem to be very successful as we speak, given the state of play. Back to you, John Fortier. In addition, we have to underscore that one of the witnesses, one of the key diplomats in the American embassy in Kyiv, David Holmes, said that after asking him what did Mr. Trump think of Ukraine, Ambassador Sondland said, well, he cares much more about the investigation of the Bidens than he really cares about Ukraine. So that might give a lie to his concern about whether Zelensky's a good guy or whether they're doing anything to deserve the military aid. But we shall see in the coming days. Give us a quick rundown of what's next. What are the next steps?
The formal impeachment process usually goes through the House Judiciary Committee. So we're going to hear some public testimony or at least hearings from the Judiciary Committee and consideration and ultimately drawing up articles of impeachment. We don't know how many there'll be, but there will be specific charges put into the form of law the committee will consider, and then ultimately the House will consider a vote on it. The goal, I think Democrats have generally said, is to do this sometime before Christmas. It takes a majority vote. I expect that the vote will be, relatively divided between the parties. The Democrats will vote for it overwhelmingly and Republicans will vote against it overwhelmingly. And then we would turn to a Senate trial, which will occur next year. Senator Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said he's going to have something of a full trial. We don't know how long that will last exactly. The Clinton trial lasted about 5 weeks. But we should expect to see the Senate hearing from both the House members who are making the case against the president and then also hearing from the president himself or from his counsel and people to defend the president, presided over by the Chief Justice of the United States, and ultimately a vote on those articles of impeachment sometime, let's say, in February of 2020.
More evidence could turn up to either bolster or hurt the president, so we shall see. And I promise you, on our next Politics Edition, we will talk about the Democratic race for the president.
Yay!
Okay. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of the program. I'd like to thank my guest, John Fortier. He's director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, senior vice president for policy at Third Way. Thanks, as always, gentlemen, for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Kim Lewis for booking our guests. Our engineer was Wojtek Zoriniak. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.